Welcome to today's deep dive. Today we are exploring a really comprehensive guide published back on March 5, 2026 by AngelSense.
Yeah, it's a fantastic resource.
It really is. It's titled Five Types of Assistive Technology for Autism, Independence and Safety. So whether you are preparing for a meeting, trying to catch up on the latest developments in assistive tech, or, you know, just looking to understand how modern tools intersect with neurodivergent daily life, you are definitely going to want to hear this.
Absolutely. And setting the stage here is critical, I think, because the foundational philosophy of this material challenges a misconception that unfortunately still kind of lingers in some sort of way.
Oh, totally. The idea that tech is a cure.
Exactly. Assistive technology, or AT, in this context is absolutely not about quote-unquote fixing autism. That is not the objective.
Or should it be?
Right. Instead, we are looking at a framework of practical support that aligns directly with how an autistic person actually processes and experiences the world. It's about bridging the specific environmental and communicative gaps that cause daily frustration or create barriers to independence or even pose serious safety risks.
That shift in perspective is everything. I mean, it moves the burden of change off the individual and onto the environment and the tools available to them.
So, okay, let's unpack this, because the material dives straight into the reality that handing someone a high-tech device is not just some magic wand that instantly dissolves all daily friction.
Far from it. You know, sitting here in my study right now, I'm actually looking at a desk covered in different blueprints and tech prototypes. And it's a stark reminder that effectively utilizing assistive technology requires navigating two very distinct spectrums simultaneously.
Two spectrums.
Yeah, the spectrum of autism itself and the rapidly expanding spectrum of the technology. What serves as a brilliant bridge to communication for one individual might be completely ineffective or even intensely overwhelming for another. Wow, okay.
It's this complex calculus involving age, a person's unique sensory profile, their preferred communication style, and, well, the specific environments they have to navigate every single day.
Which brings us to how we actually map these tools to specific support needs. You are likely already familiar with the three diagnostic levels of autism spectrum disorder. But what is illuminating here is seeing how the technology is specifically engineered to meet the profile of each level.
Right, the matrix of needs.
Exactly. Let's look at level three support profiles first. This is where individuals require very substantial support with daily tasks and communication. The tools here are often heavily focused on foundational skills. For example, an AAC device.
An augmentative and alternative communication device, yeah.
Right. An AAC designed for a level three profile might feature a very focused, intentionally limited number of words and expressions.
And there is a crucial psychological reason for that limitation. When cognitive load is already high, presenting a screen with, say, 500 vocabulary options to someone who needs very substantial support, it can cause immediate decision paralysis.
Too much of a good thing.
Precisely. Too many options become counterproductive. But then contrast that with a level two profile requiring substantial support. These individuals often have more robust communication and social interaction skills, though they obviously still navigate significant hurdles.
So they need something that can adapt more.
Yes. For this group, the ideal tool might be a tablet-based AAC device with a highly adjustable vocabulary. The architecture of the software is designed to scale. As the user's communication pathways strengthen and grow, the device's vocabulary capacity expands right alongside them.
Wait, I want to push on that for a second when we talk about level one profiles.
Sure.
Because individuals at level one are generally relatively independent, right? And they're often highly verbal. So why would they need a dedicated communication app on their phone? I mean, wouldn't a separate AAC tool just be a redundant distraction for someone who already speaks fluidly?
That is a very common assumption, actually.
Mm.
But it ignores the reality of situational mutism and sensory overload.
Situational mutism.
Yeah. Communication failure isn't always a baseline static trait. For many level one individuals, the ability to process language and speak can completely shut down during moments of intense stress, panic, or a sensory meltdown.
Wow.
The neurological pathways required for verbal speech essentially get blocked by the overwhelming demand on their nervous system. Having an AAC app on their smartphone provides a vital backup system. When they literally cannot speak, they can still communicate their needs, explain what is wrong, or just ask for help.
That makes total sense. The adaptability of the tool to the immediate situation is what really matters. And just as support needs vary, the tools themselves fall across a wide spectrum. The source categorizes these into three technological tiers.
Low, mid, and high tech.
Yep. You have low tech, which are your reliable analog tools. We're talking whiteboards, flashcards, physical sticky notes. Then mid-tech, which are usually battery-operated standalone devices. Think of push-button tools or VOCAs.
Voice output communication aids.
Right, where you press a physical button and it speaks a pre-recorded phrase. And finally, high-tech, encompassing fully digital dynamic tools on PCs, tablets, smartphones.
And with that vast array of options, the evaluation process is critical. Guessing what might work based on, you know, a sleek marketing campaign usually leads to abandoned technology and a lot of frustration.
Yeah, I bet.
A professional evaluation of the individual's strengths and support needs is the necessary starting point. Caregivers and users must weigh this complex matrix of factors. Age and cognitive development play a role, naturally, but communication style and sensory sensitivities are often the deciding factors. An autistic person might already have a favorite self-taught method for handling stress, and the new technology needs to complement that, not disrupt it.
And the physical location of where this tech will be used changes everything, doesn't it? I mean, a bulky tablet might be perfect for the living room, but is it going to work on a crowded public bus?
Exactly. Location ties directly into ease of use. If the device requires constant Wi-Fi or is too cumbersome to pull out discreetly in a classroom, it won't be used.
This just becomes dead weight.
Right. Furthermore, you have to balance user autonomy with caregiver control. Depending on the support level, caregivers might need features that allow them to monitor the device's usage or battery life remotely. And looming over all of this is the ever-present factor of safety.
Oh, definitely.
Autistic individuals, regardless of their support level, can face a significantly higher risk of wandering or elopement, which means tracking and safety features often have to be prioritized in the device selection.
That reality of safety and navigation really underscores the specific categories of devices we are looking at today. Let's delve deeper into that first category we touched on, communication and AAC support devices. We already talked about how vital these are for situational mutism, but the sheer variety of interfaces is fascinating. You have the high-tech speech-generating keypads and complex tablet apps, but the low-tech options hold their ground for very good reason.
They absolutely do. Take pragmatic organization dynamic displays, commonly known as PODD. Exactly. These are essentially highly organized physical books or binders, filled with symbols and words arranged systematically. A user flips through the pages to point to what they want to express.
Like a physical dictionary of their needs.
Basically. And while a thick binder is undeniably less portable than an app on a smartphone, and portability is a massive factor for adult independence, the physical, tactile nature of a PODD book provides a concrete, reliable system that doesn't rely on battery life or screen visibility. For some users, the physical action of turning the page is a necessary part of their communicative process.
And what is genuinely inspiring to me about these AAC tools, whether high or low tech, is that their utility extends far beyond just expressing basic physiological needs like, you know, I'm hungry or I need to leave. They actually teach the nuances of grammar, spelling, and expanding vocabulary.
It's an educational tool as much as a communication one.
Totally. And more than that, they unlock creative expression. Autistic individuals who might face profound limitations in verbal communication often possess incredible internal worlds and talents. These devices provide the conduit to express complex feelings, advocate for their own boundaries, or even engage in creative acts like drawing or composing music.
It's a game changer.
It fundamentally changes family dynamics when someone can finally express their inner life like that.
Which naturally leads us to how these individuals experience the physical world, bringing us to the second major category. Sensory regulation and calming technology. What's fascinating here is how we must divide sensory challenges into two entirely opposite physiological experiences.
Hypersensitivity and hyposensitivity.
Exactly. They require completely different approaches.
Let's start with hypersensitivity. This is where the nervous system is overwhelmed by inputs that might seem entirely benign to you. The hum of a fluorescent light, the specific frequency of a vacuum cleaner, or the texture of a specific synthetic fabric against the skin. It isn't just annoying, it is processed as physical pain or an intense, unavoidable threat.
And when that intense overwhelm hits, the neurological reaction is a fight-or-flight response. This manifests as a meltdown, intense frustration, or an overwhelming compulsion to flee the environment. To manage this influx of overstimulation, assistive technology focuses on buffering the input.
Like noise-canceling headphones.
Yes, high-quality noise-canceling headphones are a staple for blocking out auditory chaos. Weighted mats or blankets provide deep pressure stimulation, which has a profound grounding effect on the nervous system. But we also can't ignore the lowest tech, highly effective solution of environment modification.
Just removing the problem.
Simply taking action to avoid the negative stimuli entirely, like removing irritating clothing tags, swapping out lighting, or planning routes that avoid known sensory triggers.
But then you have hyposensitivity, which is the exact inverse. The individual is understimulated. Their nervous system is not registering quote-unquote normal stimuli enough to satisfy the brain's required sensory diet.
Because they are constantly craving that necessary input, they might engage in behaviors that seem disruptive or exhausting to outsiders, but are actually vital self-regulation tactics.
Like what?
Well, they might need constant physical movement, they might seek out incredibly loud music, or they might feel a strong compulsion to chew on non-food items just to get that tactile feedback in their jaw.
And the technology developed for hyposensitivity is incredibly targeted. You see bump helmets to safely accommodate physical impacts, or specialized headphones that are designed specifically to seal sound in, allowing the user to safely blast that required loud music without disrupting the classroom or office.
And lets them get what they need without the social friction.
Exactly. There's also a whole market of chewable jewelry, like necklaces and bracelets made from safe, durable silicones that satisfy that need to bite or chew safely and discreetly.
And there are tools that cross the boundary between both hyper and hyposensitivity, aimed purely at baseline regulation. Vibration tools, specialized fidget devices like spinners, and increasingly, biofeedback apps. Introducing individuals to guided breathing or calming apps on their smart devices can help them recognize the physical signs of dysregulation and improve focus, ideally intercepting a meltdown before the point of no return.
That interception is so crucial, especially when we consider the cognitive exhaustion of just trying to get through a daily schedule. Which brings us to the third category, visual scheduling and organization tools, which directly addresses the friction of executive function challenges. We know that executive function involves working memory, planning, and impulse control. But how does that actually manifest when an autistic person is trying to, say, navigate a typical Tuesday?
It often manifests as intense friction during transitions. Autistic individuals frequently find great comfort and deep focus in specific routines or interests. The cognitive demand required to stop a favored, highly engaging activity and shift attention to a new, less predictable task can be overwhelming. The brain strongly resists the transition. Furthermore, holding a multi-step schedule in working memory can cause immense anxiety.
So relying on someone just saying, okay, in 10 minutes we're leaving for the dentist, isn't going to cut it.
Not at all.
Visual representation of time and tasks is far more effective for autistic processing.
Precisely. Abstract concepts like 10 minutes or auditory instructions vanish the second they are spoken. Visuals are static and verifiable. Assistive technology here includes digital visual schedules that break the day into clear, graphic steps. Visual timers and countdown devices that physically display a shrinking block of color to represent passing time are particularly effective because they make the abstract concept of time visually concrete.
And analog tools are still heavy hitters here, too. A physical bulletin board with sticky notes or Velcro picture cards works wonders. The overarching goal is simply to make the day entirely predictable. When the structure of the day is visible and predictable, the baseline anxiety drops significantly.
The friction of those transitions smooths out.
Yeah. Over time, having that visual command of their schedule often allows users to feel ownership over their day.
Which is the perfect bridge to our fourth category, wearable smart devices for daily support. We all rely on tools to maintain our independence, our synced calendars, our smartphone reminders. For an older autistic person navigating a job, attending a university, or simply wanting to go to the grocery store alone, that need for autonomy is exactly the same. The tools just require a different physical form factor to be functional outside the house.
Because taking a large, bulky visual timer onto public transit is fraught with issues. A large device is cumbersome. It attracts unwanted attention and stares from passersby, which instantly spikes social anxiety. And going back to the realities of executive function challenges, a loose device that you have to carry in your hand is incredibly easy to set down on a bus seat and lose forever.
Which is why wearables are the necessary evolution. Smartwatches specifically engineered or adapted for neurodivergent users provide that crucial time awareness and scheduling support in a format that is discreet and socially acceptable. They look just like any other piece of consumer tech.
They blend right in.
Yes. These devices offer features like subtle vibration alerts for transitions, simplified communication interfaces right on the wrist, location sharing for peace of mind, and continuous daily routine reminders that don't require pulling out a phone.
But this isn't as simple as just ordering the most popular smartwatch on the market, is it?
Not at all. And this is a nuance that can make or break the intervention. caregivers and users must be hyper-aware of the device's physical hardware. First, consider dexterity. Can the individual reliably operate tiny side buttons or navigate a complex touchscreen interface?
That's a good point.
But more importantly, returning to hypersensitivity, the physical watch band itself is a massive variable. If the fabric of the strap is scratchy, if the silicone traps sweat, or if the physical shape of the watch face digs into the wrist, the sensory pain will outweigh any organizational benefit. The device will be taken off and abandoned. Comfort is not a luxury here. It is a strict prerequisite for utility.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. We've talked about communication, sensory regulation, and organization, but what happens when you need to integrate all of those supports with absolute real-time emergency safety? This is the domain of the fifth and final category, GPS and safety tracking devices.
This is undeniably the most critical section for many families, addressing a harsh, terrifying reality. Elopement, or wandering, is a highly common and incredibly dangerous behavior among autistic individuals across the entire spectrum.
It's a huge fear.
It is. An individual might wander off because they are fleeing a sensory trigger, or conversely, because they are drawn to something fascinating like a body of water. The constant vigilance required to prevent this is exhausting for caregivers, and paradoxically, that fear often severely restricts the autistic person's freedom. Families stop going to crowded parks or community events because the risk of losing the individual is just too high.
These GPS devices act as the ultimate safety net, restoring access to the wider world. And the technology embedded in these specific tools goes far beyond a simple Bluetooth tracker. We are talking about continuous, real-time GPS tracking. They utilize geofencing, which allows caregivers to set up digital perimeters around a school or home, instantly receiving an alert if the user crosses that boundary.
It's a proactive defense.
Yeah, they feature detailed dashboards mapping out transit routes and life-saving SOS buttons that the user can press if they realize they are lost or overwhelmed.
They also frequently include automatic pickup and two-way voice capabilities. This means a caregiver can activate the device's microphone remotely to hear the environment or speak directly to the user to guide them to safety without the user needing the dexterity to answer a phone call.
That's incredible.
These are high-stakes emergency tools designed to prevent worst-case scenarios. Having that robust safety net in place gives both the autistic person and their family the confidence to live a more active, expansive lifestyle.
And looking at the data from the 2026 AngelSense Guide, their own ecosystem is a prime example of this convergence. They utilize advanced AI to refine location accuracy and predict transit patterns. But they also integrate the well-being features we discussed earlier, pushing daily scheduling reminders through the same device.
Bringing it all together.
Exactly. And crucial to our point about physical comfort, they design these trackers in unobtrusive forms, like small fobs that can be pinned inside a pocket, or specialized watches with sensory-friendly fabrics and secure, tamper-resistant fasteners that don't trigger tactile defensiveness. The entire design philosophy is centered on supporting independence without causing sensory harm.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the underlying thesis of evaluating all this technology is profound. Assistive technology for autism reaches its full potential only when it is thoughtfully, meticulously matched to the individual's unique abilities, sensitivities, and environments. However, it remains just that, a support system.
Right.
It is a vital tool, but it is not a replacement for human connection, patience, or the hard work of actual skill building. Finding the right tech stack is an exercise in personalization, flexibility, and a high tolerance for trial and error. As an individual grows and their environments change, the technology must be audited and adjusted.
The ultimate goal of every tool we've discussed today, from the simplest physical sticky note to the most advanced AI-powered GPS wearable, is to reduce the friction of daily stress, build the user's confidence, and open doors to greater personal freedoms for you and your loved ones. Exploring new technologies as they hit the market isn't about chasing gadgets. It's about continuously looking for better bridges to connect neurodivergent individuals to the world around them.
And looking at the rapid integration of AI into these platforms leaves us with a truly fascinating frontier to consider. We know current AI can accurately track complex transit routes and trigger timely routine reminders. Mm-hmm. But let's follow that trajectory forward. What happens when tomorrow's wearable AI becomes advanced enough to learn an individual's unique, highly specific sensory threshold?
Oh, wow.
Could a future device reading continuous biometric data eventually detect subtle, invisible changes in an individual's heart rate, skin conductance, or micro-movement patterns? Imagine an AI that doesn't just react to an SOS button, but actively predicts a sensory overload before it happens.
That would change everything.
It could automatically interface with smart environments, signaling the smart lights in a room to dim, or autonomously initiating a guided breathing protocol in the user's earbuds, intercepting a sensory meltdown before the user even consciously realizes their nervous system is becoming dysregulated. The leap from tracking location to proactively managing sensory environments could redefine independence entirely.
That is a staggering possibility to leave on. A proactive, predictive support system that understands the nervous system better than we do. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the evolving world of assistive technology for autism. We hope this exploration has provided a richer, more nuanced understanding of how these tools are bridging gaps and fostering genuine autonomy. Keep learning, keep asking the hard questions, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.